And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. 3.5 minutes past nine for this Wednesday. It's the 2nd of October 2024. How are you all keeping out there? It's great to have you on board for another show. And it's the busy usual mix. A lot of reaction to the budget, of course. Very interested to hear what you think. Have you run the numbers? How does it make you feel? Does it feel better off? Are you happy with it? Is it a giveaway budget? If you're in business, was there enough in there for you? Perhaps you're a member of the farming community and you've had a look through the figures and you think it's fantastic news or otherwise. We want your reactions. We'll have plenty of reaction, political and, I suppose, financial analysis coming up over the next 3 hours. It's not all that, by the way. There's plenty else in there. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you want to have your say or raise your issues with us. 07491 25,000 if you want to give us a call. And emails from wherever you're listening to. Comments at highlandradio.com. Good morning, James, Kathy, and Mike. Amongst the hundreds who watch on a regular basis here in the 9 till noon show, you can do so on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your mobile devices, your Fire Stick, or your smart TV. And we're across our Facebook pages and around the world on all of those platforms, but also on X. Finn Valley Voice says, cautious budget to favour Finn Valley. It's the little things that break the household bank when incomes are low, leaving cert fees, Christmas dinner, school books, public transport. As the county with the lowest average household income in the entire state, yesterday's budget provisions for families were welcomed across Donegal. On to the nationals, the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Budget for early election. The coalition unleashed a budget bonanza yesterday to woo voters with one-off payments, welfare hikes and tax cuts as they prepare to go to the country for an early election. A lot of the sense out there seems to be that this is a cost of living, budget, but not necessarily a cost of doing business budget. We'll have more analysis of that later. Despite Taoiseach Simon Harris repeatedly insisting that the government will complete its term due to end in March, the growing sense in Leinster House now is that the general election will be called imminently. Fueling speculation further yesterday was the news that the finance bill, which gives effect to budget measures, has been brought forward to next week, a week earlier than normal. In addition to this, Housing Minister Dara O'Brien said the Planning and Development Bill, a landmark piece of legislation from the coalition to overhaul planning rules, will be passed into law next week. Its passing is seen as a crucial step to the completion to be completed before the dissolution of the 33rd Dáil. Coalition TDs now expect an election to be called imminently. So what's the Irish Times analysis of it? They say that the state's independent budgetary watchdog has sharply criticised yesterday's bonanza budget, warning that it repeats Ireland's past mistakes of pumping billions into the economy when it's at full employment. Some of these organisations, like the Budgetary Watchdog, they don't consider really what it's like to live or what it's like to be poor. Like, you know, the reality is interest rates goes up. That's to stop you spending, right? So that's to make it harder for you to live, to get less value for your money. So what do you do then? You drive up, and then inflation goes up and all these types. But they like to see that happening because that's the natural sway of things. I could be wrong, but that's my feeling I get from these bodies. They're not necessarily there to see how life is improving for you. They just don't mind people being under pressure from time to time. Well, in an initial response to the budget published last night, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council warned that Ireland needs a more serious vision that delivers on the economy's needs without repeating the boom-to-bust pattern of its past. I'm sure the government at this point would argue we're putting money away in the Rainy Day Fund or Ireland's Future Fund, 16-odd billion by the end of next year, investing in water, investing in roads, investing in power. So I'm sure at this point the government might say that the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council is overlooking some of the measures for future planning. But anyway, it said that the large spending increases would drive inflation adding an estimated €1,000 to the cost of typical households' yearly outgoing. And that's quite important, because if that does happen, that pretty much, for your average worker, that pretty much wipes out any benefit there might be. Large budget packages, they say, in recent years have put money back in people's pockets, but they've taken it away by pushing up prices. IFAC was also critical of the one-off benefits that have now been repeated for the third year in a row. So what is in there? Let's have a look. We'll go to the Irish Sun, because they've made it a little bit more easy to get across. So, cost of living. The £2.2 billion package will include increasing the minimum wage by 80 cents from June 1st, 2025. Well, that's businesses, really, that effectively are going to have to pay for that. That brings it up to £13.50 an hour. Extending the reduced 9% VAT on electricity and gas until April 30th, 2025, and €250 worth of energy credits in two payments, one before Christmas and the other in early 2025. Weekly social welfare protection payments are to increase by €12. There's a baby boost from next year. It's a payment of €420 for new parents and a €400 lump sum payment for working family payment recipients. There'll be two child benefit payments, €280 per child, and an increase for maternity, paternity, adoptive and parents payments of €15. In terms of tax, the €1.6 billion tax package will include a USC cutoff from 4 to 3% for workers earning up to €70,000. The point at which workers start paying the higher rate of tax has been increased by €2,000 to €44,000. The capital acquisition tax threshold has also been increased from £335,000 to £400,000. In terms of education, free school books up to Leaving Cert level and exam fees for junior and Leaving Certs are to be waived, which is not insignificant either. The Hot Meals programme is to be extended to all primary schools next year, while there will be funding for 786 additional special education teachers and 1,600 more special needs assistance. For business and work, an energy subsidy scheme for retail and hospitality businesses has been announced worth £170 million. Employees can now receive a tax-free bonus of up to €1,500 from employers, and the temporary universal relief and benefit in kind, that's BIC, regime for company cars has been extended for a further year. But just as it relates to education, they put aside €9 million for sheaths, effectively, to buy sheaths that your children will pop their phones into potentially at the start of the school day and then take them out. Effectively blocks the signal of them. But €9 million for these sheaths seems quite excessive. But what do you think about the measures for families, particularly the baby boost and also the increase in child benefit? The lump sums for it. I mean, that's an awful lot of money that's going to go to some really quite rich people. Would you have preferred to have seen that perhaps more targeted for families that need it most, rather than sort of giving millionaires effectively double child benefit payments and what have you, or a baby boost? In terms of carers, which is a very important area, the home carer tax credit and single person child carer credit is to increase by €150, while the incapacitated child tax credit is to rise by €300. The dependent relative tax credit is up by €60, and the blind tax credit will rise by €300. The weekly social protection payment will increase by €12 per week. Now, in terms of booze and smokes, an extra euro is in excise duty on a packet of 20 cigarettes kicked in at midnight. This brings the cost of 20 cigarettes to €18.05, and a lot of people are using rolling tobacco, and that's also going up. A new tax is to be introduced from mid-25 of 50 cents per millilitre of e-liquid, bringing the typical price of a disposable vape to £9.23, including VAT. However, there'll be an increase to alcohol. There'll be no increase to alcohol excise duty, but definitely ciggies have gone up. No increase in petrol or diesel, but we have a carbon tax kicking in about a week, which will add about 2 cents per litre to petrol and diesel. So no increase in the budget, but one that's locked in from a previous budget. All right, so that's just a brief run through, in case you didn't hear what was happening. Big trouble in the Middle East, no doubt. The Irish Independent, Iran fired a salvo of ballistic missiles at Israel yesterday. This in retaliation for Israel's campaign against Tehran's Hezbollah allies in Lebanon, drawing vows of a sharp response from both Israel and the United States. And this is getting very, very messy now. Obviously, Israel has been doing whatever it wanted to do. Iran was pretty quiet in relation to this. Iran, of course, would be the backer of the likes of Hezbollah and Hamas. So they weren't doing much up until now. But they fired these 180 missiles into various parts of Israel. They said that that's that. That's the retaliation for the assassination of the two groups' leaders. But if Israel responds, they will respond again. So there is an off-ramp here. I don't see the Israelis taking it, but anyway. The Iron Dome, this is a missile defense system that Israel has, that it fires missiles to intercept incoming missiles. It only does that over residential areas, so it will not try and intercept foreign missiles that are going to land in unpopulated areas, and that's why some of these Iranian missiles did make ground, because they simply don't try and defend the ones that aren't near where people live. Each one of these rockets that they fire up, actually, by the way, this is a by-the-by, is €100,000. Every rocket they, well, whatever the phraseology is, every one of those that Israel fires up costs €100,000. But that's their defense system. What I fear is going to happen now is there's a lot of concern internationally, we would read, about Iran's nuclear program. And this kind of gives Israel, and particularly the United States, an opportunity now, I think, to go after their nuclear network. And I anticipate that that may be exactly what happens. And then we'll see what Iran might do in return. And then would that drag Turkey into it? Yemen's there as well. And, of course, Russia has a strong is a strong ally of Iran, and China's a strong ally of Russia and Iran. And, you know, we hope it would never escalate to that point. But it is very worrying at the moment. But alarms sounded across Israel and explosions could be heard in Jerusalem and the Jordan River Valley. Israelis piled into bomb shelters and reporters on state television lay flat on the ground during live broadcasts. Israel said more than 180 missiles were launched into Israel from Iran, and Israeli air defences were activated to intercept them. US Navy warships fired about a dozen interceptors against Iranian missiles heading towards Israel, the Pentagon said. So at the moment, there is an opportunity, if they wish to take it, where Iran could have saved face without killing anyone, could have saved face internationally, and Israel and the US could take that off-ramp. Are they going to do it? I strongly doubt it. The Irish Daily Star this morning, the head of the OCTA's Public Accounts Committee has described the doubling in the cost of building rapid-build modular homes for Ukrainians as unacceptable. On Monday, the Controller and Auditor General revealed the estimated price of a residential unit had ballooned from €200,000 in June 22 to around €436,000 by the middle of this year. Sinn Féin TD Brian Stanley said an explanation of the soaring costs was required. He said that the units planned for Rathdowney, County Laois, were 45 square metres, which was less than half the size of a very small house. He said, so these are literally very, very small prefabricated dwellings. And if you look at the ones in Rathdowney, the cost per unit was supposed to be €145,000. By the time they were finished, they were €345,000 for these 45 metre square units. That is unacceptable. And it is, it should be. People should find that unacceptable. It's public money that seems to be wasted there. And lastly, and completely randomly, but there was not much else in this paper that I hadn't already covered, rats are to be put on the pill in a bold effort to tackle New York's infamous pest problem. City officials have approved a pilot program from next year in which contraceptive pellets will be placed in rat traps in an area of Manhattan. Drug maker Semistek says a dose of the Contra pest prevents rats from reproducing for 45 days, and regular consumption may cut the poison resistance population by 95%. So there you are, rats on the pill in New York. We'll see how that pans out. Okay. So let's have some analysis of the budget. We're joined by Crona Clahasy, who's Director of Public Affairs with Chartered Accountants Ireland, and also from Dunloe, which is a nice local angle. Good morning to you. Thank you for your time, Crona.
Good morning, Greg. Lovely to be here.
I suppose before we go through some of the measures in this budget, and we don't know all the details of everything, but we have quite a lot of information there, but where the gaps have yet to be filled, that'll become obvious. But what's your overview? How would you frame this budget? Some say it's a cost of living budget, but not a cost of doing business budget. Do you think that's a fair assessment, or do you have something different from yourself?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assessment. I think individual workers in particular have done very well out of this budget. You know, the average worker is going to find themselves €1,000 better off a year on tax cuts alone. There was also obviously a cost of living package, which was almost as generous as last year, which is surprising given inflation has come down significantly. Look, there's no doubt about it. This budget was made with two eyes firmly set on an election, and it was probably an attempt to woo voters. For business, I think it was relatively disappointing. There were a number of, I suppose, very specific tax measures that were brought in that will not benefit a large cohort of business. The VAT 9% obviously was well publicised but did not come in. The €4,000 grant that has been announced, obviously we'll wait more details on that. We'd hope that's more accessible than some of the previous grant systems. But to be honest, there was probably a lot more that they could have done for business.
Something I think like in relation to that €4,000, you have to your VAT bill has to be under 30,000, and you know that I presume that's based on turnover and not necessarily profitability. So,
well, I think the detail we have to date is that the commercial rates have to be under 30,000. So, though I know I heard on the radio this morning there were a number of businesses that are immediately not in that frame. So it will, and you know, €4,000. Will it go a long way? It's again, it's a once-off measure. It's not a long-term change to a tax system. So what we would have been calling for was something on employers' PRSI. So for every €100 a small business pays their employee, they also have to pay an €11 over to the exchequer. So that's quite significant. And that bill is only going one way. I think the government should have maybe taken a more long-term foresight view of this and actually decreased employers' PRSI, or at least committed not to increase it for the foreseeable future to give businesses a chance. Because we hear all the time that the biggest cost for business is labour. So it would have been an obvious choice, Greg.
So in terms of personal taxes, those directly related to working, I mean, there's a lot in there, but basically, is it easier just to say the catch-all is that your average worker will be €1,000 better off per year?
Yeah, essentially, look, if we look at the middle income earners, that's about €1,000. And what that's made up of, the USC, which is a very unpopular tax, we saw that the middle rate there, the 4% rate, come down to 3%. That will save around €500. And I'm talking someone on a 40 to 50,000 euro salary. The personal tax credits, there was a range of changes among the between 100 and 150 euro. That's another saving. And then for those workers that find themselves earning in and around the 45,000 euro mark, you can now earn another €2,000 before you start paying the top rate of tax of 40%. So that standard rate band, as we call it in the industry, has now gone up to 44%. So there's an extra 400 or 500 there. So that's where I'm getting the €1,000. Also, the minimum wage has been committed to increase again by 80 cent, which it'll now stand at is 12.70 at the moment. So it's going to go up to 13.50 from next year.
And is that, sorry, just the cost of that is borne by business, though, isn't it? The state announces that, and it sounds great, but that is another, not levy on business, that sounds loaded. That's another cost on doing business.
It is. And I mean, look, every business wants to look after their workers. Well, most do. And it is. It's a cost. It's very easy for the government to say, look, we're going to increase minimum wage. We're trying to get to a living wage situation. There have been huge calls in the industry to kind of pause those thoughts. You know, €13.50 an hour, that's an extra 6% now on a wage bill. We also heard that auto enrollment, which is a mandatory pension scheme, is going to come in September. That's another 1.5%. So in effect, what's happened And from next year, businesses have now got an extra 7.5% on those two labour measures alone. So that's why I think they should have offered a dig out. They should have looked at employers' PRSI and said, look, we're going to reduce it, or we'll at least cover the cost of auto-enrolment. We'll give you a temporary 1.5% in reduction. Because let's not forget, the cohort of workers that auto-enrolment is going to predominantly capture is those working in retail and hospitality in the minimum wage space. Because anyone who earns €20,000 now will have to contribute to a pension. And that means I contribute, my employer contributes, and also the state contributes. So it's a big cost. Now, it's a very welcome measure because we all know Ireland's demographic is changing. We cannot afford to fund a state pension to the level of what we're doing. So this is a great move. We're one of the only countries in the world that doesn't have this system. But I think it's coming at a time where businesses are on their knees.
Well, you see, particularly here in Donegal, because there's different businesses and some already have pension schemes and all that kind of stuff. But I'm just thinking, say, from a Donegal Northwest perspective, a lot of we have the lowest disposable income, lowest income. So more people on the minimum wage. And then, of course, in terms of business, they're competing with what's happening across the border and all that type of stuff. But particularly too in hospitality, food-led hospitality, you know, the window of income is very narrow. They've got all the bills all year round. You know, you can see how in counties such as Donegal, and not unique to Donegal though, that this budget's going to be particularly difficult for businesses here.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree. We'll have come away from yesterday's announcement with an extra 7.5% cost on their plate. And that's not sustainable. And we know that. Look, the detail will be released over the coming days in terms of the grants. It's some sort of lifeline. But from what I'm hearing is it's just simply not enough. Mm. Look, the VAT 9% rate was always going to be difficult to introduce purely because of the cost of it. I think it was 750 million it's going to cost for 1 year. It's not insignificant. It also targets a narrower industry. And I think there was a sense among some of the experts that the evidence was not there that the 9% was needed. Mm. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
A cafe struggling to make ends meet in Donegal Town is very different to a major hotel dynamic pricing in Dublin. I just can't understand why there wasn't something more nuanced that could be introduced to not reward those that perhaps exploit the public at certain times, but actually to support those that are, you know, a key element of our tourism industry and just the general vibrance of a community. I don't know why they couldn't have introduced something more targeted. It'll be an interesting year or two because we're already seeing huge closures in food-led businesses. So we'll see what happens going forward. In terms of carers, I was looking through the figures and I don't have experience of that, so I couldn't really make out, you know, where the benefit is. But I know there's a lot of carers here in Donegal, as there are right across the country. And I'm just curious as to how this budget might benefit them.
Yeah, so I suppose there was a big social protection budget announced. All the social protection payments have gone up by €12 per week from next year. And there's also going to be an October bonus of a double payment for long-term social protection payments. So that does include carers. It also includes pensioners, people with disabilities, lone parents and the long-term unemployed. There's also an additional €400 once-off payment for a carer support grant. And there were some other announcements around, if you're living alone allowance, you're going to get an extra €200 lump sum. The fuel allowance, which some may be entitled to, there's going to be a €300 lump sum made in November for that cohort. Also, the energy credit, it's €250. There's going to be one payment by the end of this year and one payment next year. Now, that energy credit is going to everybody, which I think, again, probably begs the question, did we need more targeted measures to help the likes of the carers, people with long-term disabilities, people on long-term unemployment? Because, you know, the reality is, and as you just said, Ireland is very regionalised. There will be people in the country that do not need the energy credit. They do not need the double childcare benefit that's coming in November, October, November. And, you know.
Or the baby boost, for that matter.
Or the baby boost stuff. That I think that's a triple payment, isn't it, on the birth of your child. So, you look, it's difficult, you know, because my concern on just throwing money at everybody is that there will be lots of people who save the money. There were lots of people who go out and spend it on things that they probably don't need to buy. And they actually have the absolute opposite effect, and they actually stoke inflation again. And then we're back to square one. So I'm much more in support of the government taking a long-term view on things and actually introducing things that will make a difference. So if we take childcare, for example, and I know we've just mentioned there's a couple of payments on child benefit, but childcare, I suppose, is a, and I'm sure in Donegal it's no different, is it costs parents a lot. So a commitment by the government last year to increase the national childcare subsidy, which is a universal subsidy, everybody's entitled to it. It's now €2.14 an hour. It was 50 cent a few years back. So it has come on a huge amount. It's an hourly rate. So what it actually does is it reduces the childcare bill by 50%. Now, look, there's an argument that childcare bills are very high anyway, but it goes some way to mitigating the cost. So I think the government needs to be thinking about things like that, as opposed to just giving a once-off double childcare benefit payment right before Christmas. It's probably going to go into the Christmas spending. So look, I'm very supportive of the National Childcare Subsidy. I think it is working. Now, there was no commitment yesterday to further raise it, but the current increase has only just kicked in. So I think, look, we are in danger of getting into this cycle of throwing money at everybody, where I think we should be doing more targeted measures.
Other things that might help working families is education in terms of school book fees and some changes to Susie Grant criteria and college fees as well, because it can be really tough. You know, that bill's coming down the line as your child's entering sixth year of whatever it might be. Is it easy to pick out what benefits there are for families in that regard?
Yeah, there was a few things mentioned for students. So the first thing, I suppose, is the Leaving Cert and Junior Cert fee. So they've been waived in their entirety. And there was also kind of a loose commitment, and I haven't seen the detail on it, in terms of more funding for free school transport. The student contribution, which is the contribution that students make when they enter third level, that's going to come down by 1,000. I know that has been coming down over the years. That was a commitment that Simon Harris had made in his time as Minister for Higher Education. And then there was some other kind of woolly detail about a once-off reduction of about a third in the contribution fee for apprenticeships in higher education, which is positive. And then and also another €1,000 towards postgrad tuition fees and for grant recipients. So you're going to get another €1,000 back there. Look, again, as you said, there will be more detail in terms of the Susie grant, because I know there was a lot of commentary up to the budget around that, whether the eligibility criteria was going to be increased. We just need to look through the detail of that over the coming days and see what exactly that means. But look, it is positive that we're trying to reduce the cost for parents, because we know we talk about childcare a lot, but the expenses don't stop. And when you get to third level education, between housing and transport, etc., every little bit helps. It is positive to see that we are trying to invest in the future. So look, I think yesterday's announcement were relatively positive, and from what I've heard have been relatively well received. But again, the devil's in the detail.
Yeah, and each minister takes an opportunity to have a press conference or what have you, and tease out the detail in this. That's why some of it, as you very well put it, is a bit woolly. Like, say, for instance, the media minister's got a press conference this afternoon where we'll get more detail on the lump sum that was announced. So have we covered everything there in terms of, you know, the government's making a lot of investments in the future in terms of, you know, in water infrastructure, in terms of electricity? I haven't heard much about health, funny enough. You know, it doesn't really sound like it's dominated people's thoughts or the minds or what have you. But I did hear one bit of analysis that suggested that the investment in the health services is spending money to stand still. But I've heard that before.
Yeah, look, it is interesting, because over the last number of years, it's health, health, health. And, you know, I think maybe that's a specific strategy to try and divert attention. I think we've got lots of other problems, not least housing, water and infrastructure, as you mentioned. And we know, obviously, we've got the Apple money now, and the minister did, and the sale of the AIB shares. The minister did announce yesterday that he was allocating $3 billion towards infrastructure. But I suppose the issue with infrastructure really in this country is, look, we've seen the disaster that has been the National Children's Hospital. And I think public confidence is low in the government's ability to actually deliver on some of these infrastructural projects. So I think what we need to see now is a better joined up thinking. And we need to see, look, we have 3 billion. Well, we have more than 3 billion. But is it going to be spent in an efficient manner and deliver a project on time? And that's what we need, because I think at the moment in the public discourse, things like housing and health and water and all that, they're being trumped now by the ability to actually deliver. Like, we hear all these commitments that are going to deliver X amount of houses, but actually, is there faith in the public that that will actually be done? So what I'd like to see is the government actually commit and actually be held accountable.
Yeah, I think that's what I think that's what this election is actually going to be fought on. I think there's going to be an awful lot of opposition people rummaging through OPW files and all that kind of stuff, because what we have learned at the moment, with everything else that's going on, the likes of that 330,000 on the bike shed has dominated the headlines remarkably. I'm not saying it's not insignificant, right? But when we talk about the money we're talking about now, so there's going to be more of that. The security hut, the prefabricated homes for refugees. I think all of that and how the government spend its money, I think that's, if I were fighting the election, I'd be focusing on, right, we can't beat them on the cash and giving money to people, but what we can drill down is to how responsible the spending is with public money. And I can't see any other way, really. That's going to be one of the big key things for this election, I think. Is there anything, Krona, that I haven't touched on that you think is important? But just whilst you consider that, actually, and I think this is a fair question from a listener here, and it's not a criticism of you or I don't believe, but, you know, we take an average family or an average worker, but they want to know, what will the budget do for a householder, two workers on minimum wage, with one child and a rented house? The experts tend to base everything on someone on 40 or 60k a year. So obviously they get two electricity payments totaling 250. They'll get two double child welfare payments. They'll get an increase in the minimum wage of 80 cents. Some of this is before Christmas, some of it's after. What else would be in there for that family, Krona?
So they'll have the national childcare subsidy if their child is in care in creche. If they're not in a registered child, might mind that subsidy unfortunately isn't available to them. They didn't mention what age their child was, so they may have some of the fee waivers for the leaving cert or junior cert, the school transport, the free school transport. Maybe if they're in third level, they'll have availability of some of the grants, the €1,000 reduction in the contribution fee. The rent tax credit has gone up from 750 to 1,000. I know it's not huge, but it will do some way, assuming that there's a small amount of tax being paid. The USC probably won't impact them. That's fair to say, because that you have to be earning over 25,000 for that to impact. The energy credit, as you say, there'll be two payments and the double child benefit. So yeah, that's really it. And I suppose the 80 cent increase in the minimum wage will help. And also what the government have tried to do is adjust the tax band so that it doesn't mean you're falling into a tax net as a result. But look, I think, you know, the point's well made. I suppose we talk about the average worker because that's where we try to balance some of the commentary on, but I think it's a very well made, very good point to make.
Yeah, and it's like it's when we talk about housing, it's your average three bed semi, or none of this ever feels to apply to me. But anyway, they will be better off. The detail will suggest how much by. So anything else that you think important to mention, Krona, before we wrap up?
No, I think, look, I think just, you know, going forward into 2025, I think the point is on infrastructure. We need to get our act together, I suppose, and we need to fix housing. And we need to, you know, we want to make, as the ministers, you know, they gave their election speeches yesterday, they want to make Ireland a better place to work and live. And I think that's what we need. But I think more focus needs to be on business. And I think, look, I would caution from these cost of living packages every year. I think we need to introduce some long term measures that actually make a long term impact.
Yeah, because we read today from the fiscal advisory that these benefits will be wiped out effectively by inflation.
Yeah, and that's my concern. You know, you put more money into a society that automatically will push prices up. Because as it comes back to the point we were making earlier, there is a cohort that don't need this money. Okay. And it may have the opposite effect, and that's the risk. So look, I think we need to seriously think ahead of budget next year that, you know, I would have expected the cost of living package to come down. If we weren't facing an election, I think we would have seen a much lesser package. And I suppose that's the reality.
Brilliant analysis. Thank you so very much. I really do appreciate it. Crona Clossy from Dunlow, of course, but also Director of Public Affairs with Chartered Accountants Ireland. A caller says, I'm not in the hospitality trade, but however, I am still disappointed that their VAT rate has not been reduced. I feel the government has based this on the Dublin area where the hotels are getting big money at concert times and leaving out the rural areas again. Sad, but true. Hi, Greg. I have to stop talking about inflation because I don't understand it anymore. We keep hearing about inflation coming down, but cost of living going through the roof, electricity going up, fuel going up, groceries going up all the time. Everything in budget yesterday just fuels this increase in minimum wage. Again, is going to wreck small businesses, which were already on its knees. All this to buy votes in the upcoming election, they say. I already paid €3,000 in fees. Will there be a refund of the 1,000? I haven't heard anything about that, but you know, someone might have a baby today and not in January, and they're going to lose out on the baby boom. There's always a start point where these things are introduced. So I'm not saying you won't get a refund, because I do seem to remember some conversation in this regard with a previous reduction in fees. We'll try and find that out. But at this point, no one bar the minister probably knows that with any certainty whatsoever. Marie Nolan is West and Northwest Healthy Age Friendly Homes Regional Manager and joins me on the show now. Marie, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for your time. So talk to us about what's described as a first of its kind programme, which enables older adults to continue living independently.
Yeah, so the Healthy Age Friendly Homes programme, as you said, it's we're under the umbrella of Age Friendly Ireland. We're around since 2021. So we piloted the programme in 9 local authorities in phase one. And now we're scaled up and rolled out the programme nationally this year in all local authorities. So basically, it's a new and innovative way of working to support older people to remain an age in place. We have a strong collaboration with the Department of Health, who fund the programme, and Department of Housing, who hosts the coordinators in the local authorities. So we've had huge success with it to date. So, you know, the aims of it really is to enable the person to age in place or in a house, you know, that's more suited to their needs, to avoid premature admission to long-term residential care, and, you know, to be independent and a sense of autonomy. So,
and it's one of these programs that is beneficial, obviously, because I think most people would like to age in the environments that you described. But also, it saves the state a significant amount of money. And for all the right reasons, too, you know, in reducing hospitalizations and what have you.
Yeah, it's a good news story, really, you know, because the older people in this country are very important. And I think that there's a lot of good services what we're finding out there, but there's nobody really joining the dots to them. So that's really our role, is to, you know, help that person find out what services are out there, what they're entitled to, and do that piece of work, not just give them the information, but to, you know, execute the actions with them and sit with them. And exactly that, to try and keep the care close to home. You know, and there's a huge cost saving, but also, you know, there's data there to say that we've an aging population by 2040. Over 65s will make up nearly almost a quarter of the population, which is brilliant. The people are living longer lives, but it's going to, you know, have an impact on services and, you know, on different things. So it's a good proactive approach, and we've had huge success with it to date.
And where was this trialled? Where was it trialled?
Yeah, so we had 9 local authorities, so across the country it was kind of spread out. I'm the regional manager of the West Northwest, so all of Connacht and Donegal. So we've only had it in Galway in phase one. So it's new now, it's available in every county. And then I suppose we had data from that influence the funding, the ring fence funding for it to be rolled out nationally. So it's great to be able to say now that everybody over 65, it's a free service, it doesn't affect anything you're in receipt of already, and there's at least one coordinator located in every local authority now.
Right, so what supports are available? Before I get to that, you know, if someone's over 65, how do they come into contact with this programme?
Yeah. So we don't cold call any older person. You know, they I suppose the uniqueness of it and why it's worked is that that consent comes from the older person. We don't go out and do something for them. It's absolutely, they're the, you know, the forefront. They self-direct any of the actions that we do. So it's self-referral. It may come in from a family member or a healthcare professional, but again, with consent of the older person. The coordinator, when they receive the referral, will make a phone call to the older person to make sure that they understand what the referral was about. And all of the visits and the initial assessments happen in the older person's home, because that's really important. We build up a relationship with the older person, and also it gives us an insight as to what's going on with the older person. And then we carry out a very comprehensive initial assessment, needs assessment, under the domains of housing, health, technology, climate, finance and community. So depending on what comes up on that, and it's case by case, and as I said, personal centred to the participant, we'll you know, support them to develop an action plan. And then based on that, so we will signpost services, handholding them those procedures if that's the requirement, and provide information.
So in terms of if an assessment is made and it's determined that, you know, the house could be adapted, right-sized, which is an interesting phrase, you know, the introduction of technology, whatever it might be, if that's identified as a need, who funds it? Who provides that support or enables the older person to sort of make these changes?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. So as you said, the adaption, obviously we found data from phase one, a lot of people had history of falls or found it difficult using stairs, or, you know, might have a bathroom that's set up with a bath and they're not, you know, their mobility is declined and they have to hop into the bath to have a shower. So that providing of information may include letting them know what adaption grants, which is quite topical in the budget at the minute, is available through your local authority. And then because we're located in local authority, obviously we have been trained and informed on that process. So there's you know, over 60% of our actions in phase one fell under housing, because, you know, there's the housing conditions was very common. So we would help the person make that application if that's what they choose to do, but also gather the information, the paperwork. You know, a lot of things are gone online, for example, or you know might be difficult to get through, or, you know, locate certain paperwork. So we do all of that process if, you know, if it's identified that's what the person wants us to help with. And then we would follow up then, you know, we would help them through the application, but also if they got approval with the paperwork that comes with that, applying for VAT back at a later date. So it just depends again. But like, as I said, the services are out there. You know, there's a lot of people that wouldn't know, you know, how to apply for the fuel allowance, for example. There could be family members that are supporting that older person to stay at home, and we help them maybe with the carer's allowance application. Like you said, the technology, there's a lot of technology out there as well, with the National Council of Blind, with, you know, there's different services, different services that are applying different emergency technology, again, depending on the needs of the person. So really, we're a mobile information unit as such, because yeah, we're giving the information, but yeah, it's based on what comes out in the needs assessment.
Of course, and it means there's little waste, but needs are met, I presume. But there's also other services out there, occupational therapists, you know, regional transport, I don't know, there's Meals on Wheels services, things like that, that maybe older people don't avail of, because where do you even begin to sort of, you know, track them down or make use of their availability?
And I think that's the uniqueness of this programme, because we're the collaboration between Department of Health and Department of Housing. So we've a huge resource there sitting in local government. We've access to 40,000 colleagues nationwide. And then the health side, we have very strong stakeholder engagement with health professionals. So again, that we have done that piece with them. They know the programme. So if we've identified based on the needs assessment, we will make contact with primary care services in the community, or, you know, again, whatever comes up on that needs assessment, we'll try and support as much as possible the older person to signpost to that. Or, you know, it's not always black and white, unfortunately. Some cases are very complex, and we're learning all of the time, and I suppose we're quite nosy as to what's out there, what's happening. Things are changing in terms of benefits for people as well, so it's just that information piece of keeping informed and trained and collaborating with others to bring that back to the older person.
And if someone, say for instance, already has a home care package or something in place, how does this align with that or engage with that, or does it make any difference?
It doesn't impact. You know, we'll ask again, we're collecting a lot of data in terms of what people are in receipt of as well, just for to know what services, lots of gaps in services. And that's something we're hoping to do now for the national rollout, is to identify best practice, but also where there might be gaps, where there's, you know, a population of people where there's no Meals on Wheels, you know, in a certain mile radius, and try and inform from a policy point of view or a funding point of view from that level. But if they have something in place already, it doesn't affect anything you're in receipt of already. But I've never been, you know, went out and visits in phase one, I've never been to a house where you didn't have at least one action.
Yeah.
Or somebody, you might just give them information. And that's as well, we don't ever close off a case. You might provide information. If the person decides they don't want to do anything with it right now, they can phone back into the service in a year's time, you know, if the circumstances change, and we engage and support them.
Just finally then, my thing that interests me most was, you know, what was the outcomes? I presume you spoke to people who'd been engaged with and helped where help was needed and what have you. You know, what did the feedback tell us about the benefits to people of this program?
There was definitely an increase in self-efficacy, you know, functional ability. The loneliness was a huge issue, and definitely, you know, that age cohort after COVID, for, you know, had that status of cocooning. So a lot of disconnect from community. So, you know, again, it was just about doing that kind of, all of those domains are so important to people. So it's trying to give them information. Community can be as important to one person as, how, as, you know, something going on in their house. So, yeah, there was the evaluation report had huge data from the feedback of the participants that it definitely did exactly what
four
we
out of five,
to make them feel independent.
Yeah, four out of five reported having a greater self-belief in their ability to respond to new or difficult situations. Over half now feel they have a strong level of social support, which talks to what you've just been mentioning. And that's an increase of close on 10%, which is helpful. So very finally, if someone's listening, this is a service or a program that's available now in the Northwest region. How do people who are over 65 go about enrolling, or whatever the terminology is to get that visit and that assessment?
Yep. So we have two coordinators in County Donegal, just because of the population in Donegal, Clodagh and Emma. But our head office is in Kells in County Meath, because that's where the shared service is. So the number is 046-924-8899. And if you phone that number, there's a team there. Somebody will answer the call and take the relevant information, and then they'll be in contact with the coordinator in your area.
Okay, listen, it's been interesting. Thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it, Marie.
Me.
All right,
bye
bye. Take care. That's Marie Nolan, who's West and Northwest Healthy Age Friendly Homes Regional Manager. That's available here now in County Donegal. The two ladies, as you heard them name checked there, are responsible for this, to call out to someone's house, assess needs, assist in, you know, applications to housing adaptation grants or whatever it might be, whatever other schemes that might be there, connect people with occupational therapists, social and community groups, which I think is really useful in terms of loneliness and engaging with others. And if there's Meals and Wheels in an area, or if they want to avail of hospital transportation or whatever, these people will help them sort of get that correct information and make those connections. So hopefully it's going to be of benefit to some people out there. No one really has used it yet up here, so we can't get feedback at this point. But down the line, I'd be really interested to hear of people's experience. Okay.